With the elimination of Roe v. Wade, now is a very good time for pro-lifers to educate others as to the wrongness of abortion. And perhaps the best way of doing that is to point to unborn babies who were aborted but who survived their abortions. Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit. And today we have with us Rebecca Terrell, who is the author of a piece entitled Life After Being Aborted. Now, Rebecca, as you know, the reason we came up with that particular title, as opposed to another title such as Abortion Survivors, is because we wanted to make absolutely clear we were not talking about the mothers, but we're talking about the actual babies being aborted.
Yes.
And what was it like working on this article?
Well, it was very, it was awe-inspiring, mind-blowing. It is something that happens a lot more frequently than anyone wants to talk about, but babies do survive abortions sometimes, especially late term, but it has happened before too, that first trimester and second trimester abortions are unsuccessful and the babies survive. So it is proof that a fetus is not a clump of cells. A fetus is a real human being who, if provided the opportunity, can grow into an adult and have a full life. It's just one more stroke against the abortion industry, saying that all they're doing is getting rid of a clump of cells that's not wanted anyway.
Well, this article that you wrote appears in the July 25 issue of the New American Magazine, and the entire issue is really a special report. All the articles devoted to the subject of abortion, but arguably, your article may be the most compelling. How is it possible for a baby to be aborted and survive? Could you give a couple examples?
Well, there are several examples in the article, but yes, often it happens that the abortionist misses a baby because a mother is pregnant with twins. And so the abortionist thinks that they have completed the abortion when they've actually just taken one of the two. And in other situations, there are late-term abortions, for instance, chemical abortions, saline mm-hmm. infusion, when saline is injected into the womb of the mother in order to burn the baby and dehydrate and cause brain hemorrhage. Some babies are tough. God is watching over them and wants them to survive, and he allows that to happen. The baby comes out and shows signs of life, and if a nurse is there who has a conscience, she makes sure that that baby survives. In some cases, there are other, like I said, early trimester, first trimester or second trimester abortions, dilation and curettage, or dilation and evacuation, where a baby is supposed to be chopped up. But for one reason or another, the abortionist botches it, or what they call botching, what we would say would be miraculously does not succeed in their murderous intent, and the baby does survive. Usually when babies survive processes like that, they are not without scars. And they do suffer physical disabilities after they're born, but they certainly would not consider their lives as expendable. They are grateful for life. It is beautiful to hear these survivors talk about the preciousness, that value of life, or so many of us would think, oh, why didn't they let that handicapped child die? No, that handicapped child is just as entitled to life as any of us. And those children grow up to say how appreciative they are, how grateful they are to God for preserving their lives. And their parents are grateful too. Their parents say, this is, God made it possible for me to be a parent because he saved this child's life. They were just beautiful stories, absolutely
right.
Inspiring stories.
Now, I know in some cases those babies were brought up by parents who adopted the babies as opposed mm-hmm. to the natural parents. Mm-hmm. But could you cite an example of a baby who was brought up by parents who adopted him or her and later met the the birth mom and the birth mom who had the baby aborted and how that went?
Sure, certainly. Hope Hoffman is a great example. She was adopted more than 30 years ago at the age of 3 months. She had terrible trauma from the abortion that her mother had had during the first trimester. Her mother went home to find out later that she was still pregnant. And when the abortionist confirmed that, he offered to redo the procedure. The mother said no, because abortion is such a traumatic experience for a mother. Once a woman goes through abortion, often she greatly regrets it. And in this case, she did. She was not aware, however, of the trauma that her child had endured. When Hope was born, she had part of her skull and her scalp were pulled back from her brain was exposed. And they had to revive her. They resuscitated her several times after birth, and they did surgery. She has a scar on her head now, and her adoptive mother calls that her kissing spot. Hope has cerebral palsy. She's confined to a wheelchair. She absolutely loves life. Every day is a new a wonderful experience for her. She always has a positive attitude. They did keep in touch with her birth mother. She was able to meet her birth mother a number of years ago, and the experience has been beautiful for everyone, especially for the birth mother. Her birth mother's name is Tanya, and to have that forgiveness from a child who, you know, you tried to kill, but now they have a beautiful relationship with one another. And Tanya is really part of their family, part of Hope's adopted family now. So, you know, there's a huge lie in the abortion industry that abortion is getting rid of a problem, that it's going to ruin the mother's life if she carries this child to term, even if she gives it up for adoption, or keeps it, you know, keeps the baby for herself. That's absolutely not true. The experience that we've seen of women who opt for life rather than abortion, their friends rally around them. Aid materializes even for people who seem to have no support at all. And these babies, especially the babies who are born with severe retardation or severe handicaps, there are always parents who want to adopt. And there are many parents who specifically want to adopt special needs because they know what a gift from God it is to raise a child like that.
Now, regarding the babies who were aborted but survived and have since grown up, because we've had abortion for a long time and many of them are now adults, there are, of course, some who do not want their stories known. Right. And, of course, they had that right not to go public, but there are others who have gone public and in fact have gone on the pro-life circuit and have given talks across the nation. How do you explain, Rebecca, the fact that we don't hear more about these survivors of abortion?
Well, I think it probably has a lot to do with the fact that the media doesn't want to get that story out, just like we've seen since the Roe v. Wade decision. Even when the draft came down, we've seen a lot of violence against pro-life organizations and pregnancy centers, adoption centers. But it's not being reported in major media. The New American has been doing a good job of covering those stories, but we're not hearing it in the major media. The fact that the major media doesn't talk about it, though, doesn't mean it doesn't happen. We know from research that was done a decade ago by Live Action, Lila Rose's organization, that there are on the order of 1,200 live births, babies who are born alive after abortion, who live to tell about it. Again, like you said, now there are people who don't want to tell their story. It's too painful or too private. There are some people who don't know. A lot of the survivors found out later in life that they survived abortion simply because a family member let it slip, or, you know, some other, it's usually, from what I read, it's not often one of those things that's divulged to a child early in life, right, which is probably smart. Well, but, you know, it could be traumatic.
It's got to be horrific. Yes. To find out that your mother tried to kill you.
Right. Exactly. But the overwhelming feedback from all of these adults who found out that their birth mother tried to kill them is one of forgiveness. I understand. She thought that she was in a desperate situation. She thought this was her only option. She believed the lie that it was healthcare. And one of the abortion survivors says, "This is not healthcare because I am not a disease. You know, a baby right. in the womb is not a disease. It is a new life, and it is a beautiful thing, and it's a natural thing for a mother's body to go through." But anyone who might be listening to this interview right now and considering abortion in what seems like a desperate situation, I read a statistic recently that there are some, for every child in this country that's put up for adoption, there are something along the lines of 36 to 40 couples waiting for that child. I mean, you have people who are fighting over, not literally fighting, but who are praying and begging for a child to adopt, to give them a good home. And these are people who are willing. I know some of them because I know people who have done this, people who have talked women who are walking into an abortion clinic to have an abortion. They've talked them out of it on the spot and paid every dime of any medical bills. They've housed these girls. They've taken care of them throughout and beyond the pregnancy too, and kept them in touch with their natural offspring and adopted their offspring. It's called an open adoption. It's something mm-hmm. that's very, very common in this country. So, you know, the lies of the abortion industry, I believe, are perpetuated because it is so lucrative. The doctors who perform abortions make a lot of money. And I really wonder if that money went away, would they really be as concerned about these women, about, oh, helping them to overcome this terrible travesty that's happened in their life because they've become, you know, because of the unwed mother type situation?
Well, of course, some of these doctors, it's fair to say that when a baby is aborted alive, the doctor is not necessarily going to rescue that baby and get that baby the care that he needs to survive. In fact, Dr. Gosnell, for example, is now in prison for life. And I believe he's in Philadelphia, wasn't he? But he's in prison for life because of the evidence that was shown beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. He specialized in late-term abortions, and he would kill the babies when the babies were aborted alive.
And the grand jury investigation found that it was such a common practice that no one could put a number on it. They interviewed all of the staff from the abortion mill that he ran. They said it was such common practice, and some of them described that it really bothered them because the babies were crying, and the babies would scream or cry out or groan under the trauma that he was putting them under by murdering them. And they'd have nightmares about it. That's horrid. But we know he's not the only one. We know from there's an abortion mill in Washington, D.C. called Washington Surgery Clinic. It's run by Dr. Cesare Santangelo. In March, there were pro-life advocates who recovered the aborted bodies of babies who were obviously live birth or partial birth abortion victims. And both of those crimes are against federal law. It is against federal law to perform a live birth or a partial birth abortion.
Now, I know, Rebecca, you've been involved in the pro-life movement for many years. In fact, it's been very much a family affair for you because when you're growing up, your mom was very involved. I think right up until she got sick and eventually passed away, was a leader in the pro-life movement and in the state where she lived. I'm sure you've, in the past, in your pro-life activities, have pointed to the fact that there are babies who do survive abortion and how that demonstrates beyond any doubt whatsoever that you're not talking about a blob of tissue, that you're talking about an actual human being. So a final question, Rebecca, how effective has it been in your pro-life work to point to these examples of these babies who were aborted and survived? Do you find that opens minds and hearts?
I think it very much does, because it's very hard to argue abortion with someone who survived it. Gianna Jessen is mm-hmm. a great example of that, full of life, just a beautiful, beautiful person. And she has been active in the pro-life movement for decades now. She survived saline infusion abortion in 1977. To hear her talk is such a great experience. It's so inspirational because she has a lot of physical disabilities because of that attempted abortion. She does not let it slow her down. She says, God made sure that she survived so she could make a lot of people very uncomfortable. And that is what she said, that she has a lot of fun doing it. So I would recommend anybody to look her up, you know, look on YouTube or Rumble or all of the video places for some of her speeches. You will not be disappointed. You will leave any speech of hers very inspired and very grateful to God for the life that he gave you.
Yes, and that's a great suggestion, Rebecca, to look her up. But also we want to encourage our viewers to look up your article as well, and we'll have a link to that in the description to this video. So once again, Rebecca's article is entitled Life After Being Aborted, and it's in the July 25 issue of the New American Magazine, which is totally dedicated to the issue of abortion and Roe versus Wade. And I do believe, Rebecca, your article could be a game changer, that if we get people reading it who are contemplating abortion, I think it would it could really change their minds.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate that.